Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, it's Richie Rich from the 415, and I'm giving a shout to my people at Off the Cuff Radio, the best show out on Friday nights. Keep knocking these busters' heads off, you feel me?
Hey, yo, this is Fleetwood from the Cotton Picker, and right now, you're tuned in to Off the Cuff Radio.
Hey, this is Anais Lauren giving a shout out to Eric King the Ruler, OTG, and the whole Guild team.
Hey, it's Coco Filipina from NC Rap Scene and Turnt Tuesday. And I'm giving a big shout out to King Eric, Miss Chinchilla, Sandman off of Off the Cuff Radio. You are now tuned in.
It's Coney Brooks, the King of New York, and I want to give a shout-out to Off the Cuff Radio, the Gang Team, and Da Vinci Clothing for the love and support. Let's kill them in 2018, you heard?
Yo, what's hood good with it? This your boy, Big Prodigy, from the South Central Cartel. I'm just kicking back, chilling, listening to my homeboys on Off the Cuff Radio. Turn that shit up.
Number 17, and he carried around his dreams in a bottle of Visine, on styrofoam cup with a straw full of water, full of that brown shit in the plot, get his shoulder, got a daughter, baby mama, that both need him bad, left the house with a pound, but where the weed he had, just got a sad story, cause that money been gone, can't even call home, just sold his cell phone, they caught his ass slipping, on the block with 3 G's, nodding them stick up boards, put him down on his knees, put that pistol to his head, yeah, it's a cold game. That was a week ago, and all he's feeling shame. That's the family's old name, trying to hide the pain. Stomach aches, runny nose, no life ain't the same. Used to stay fitted, name don't even change. Don't even smile no more, it's like his face hangs. One look in the mirror, he got his damn self to blame. Can't even get high, cause he too damn sick. Got a monkey on his back that he can't even kick. A monkey on his back, he can't even kick.
Bones and it's making me moan. Stomach aching, I'm trying to fake it. People telling me I'm gone. Constantly hustling backwards, deep in my addiction. Telling myself I'm a kick, but apparently I'm not listening. Last night I had a long talk, long walk with myself, trying to convince me that I need help. It sounds good until that body start reacting. All that chemical substance got me moonwalking like Michael Jackson. Since every step I take forward, I'm moving 10 steps backwards toward self-destruction and certain disaster. But it's every mind just really trying to keep my head high, chin straight. Robin beauty upon a paycheck, son. Now that's how I say. Can't afford to lose my soul. I'm spinning out of control. Hard to believe that I'm chose, but just don't feed my nose. It ain't hip hop that got me hopped out, cause hop ain't hip. Once you get your grip, better got that you don't slip.
I knew him since 12, couldn't believe my eyes when I seen him in jail. Sweating in that cell, tossing and turning, itching and scratching. He damn sure wasn't acting, running to the bars, screaming for the guard. Throwing up in the toilet, praying to God to take away the pain, he would rather fear death. Shame is all left, he'll shit it all on himself. Don't want nothing to eat, wanna get back to the streets. Cold sweat in that blanket, all he feel is heat. Every time somebody come in, all he wanna know, you got some dog food, some hot, some blow. It hurt me to my heart to see OG like this. They say the game ain't fair, I guess this the cold twist. It's been 2 days now, he been in here kicking. The same nigga in the hood that'll have your ass missing. They ain't helpless like a baby without his team. A million-dollar dream done created a dope fiend. No matter how it seems, the day that he clean. When you hear this song, they gon' start to sing.
The man was top down. Walking up and down, walking with my paper, covering my socks and my snout. My nigga Fleetwood came through. Talking about racing, what's up with you? Giving the creeps to Donald who will continue to do what I do. Going to get the cheaper. On my way to the suit, the block. Pass by the peel, corner, left the nigga with the ooh and I. Said no, the ooh's upside your head. So many traveling situations, I'm surprised I ain't dead. Gotta thank the Lord for living and loving me. Embracing me, showing my strength and my weaknesses. Stay lacing me, all aboard the J train. Out here in the bay, man, we riding for the match today like all day, yeah.
This is King Eric, Media Assassin. You're now tuned in to a special episode of Off the Cuff Radio. That was the big homie Fleetwood from the Cop Pickers. This joint here was called West County. We want to show that brother some love since he showed it back to us. And this show is sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, Da Vinci Clothing, Fleetwood and the Cop Pickers, Jesse Boutique, and Core Financial. I got my host, T-Max with the Fact alongside with me.
What it do, y'all? This is another Super Sunday of Off the Cuff Radio, and this is a very, 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 very special show tonight. The African-American experience in this country is a very long story, sometimes tragic, but full of triumph, and a very multidimensional, whether sports, academics, what have you. From baseball to football and basketball, but there's also another element of it that is not always recognized but should be respected and revered, and that is the game of golf. And tonight's guest is one of the most distinguished, one of the most professional, one of the most sincerest and super individuals we have had the pleasure to have on our show. This man is the founder, the proprietor, and the outreach, the head outreach for Minority Golf Association. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Mr. Sherrod G. What's going on, man?
How are you guys doing, man? How are you? Thank you. Thank you. That was touching, man. That meant a lot.
Man, look, we're great. Look, you're very welcome, and we're excited, man. I mean, look, we've been playing this show
big
for
show.
A while, you know.
Yes, we have. And it's, you know what? You are right. The game of golf is something that we promote basketball, we promote football. But golf is something you can play from 3 to 80 to your death, really. And it's just a sport that gives you so much mental clarity, sometimes frustration, but it also gives you that competitive edge so that you can, you know, you can use it in the boardroom, you can use it wherever, because the average CEO plays golf.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, every deal I've ever done stemmed from the golf course.
You know,
so I decided at one point to do that.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. No. You're good. You're good. And it's funny because we think about it, Sherrod, King and myself doing this show, people we've met, We've met a lot of people along the way, and we've learned that business can be brokered in many aspects. You know, one of my homegirls, like, it's funny because when you talk about how business is done, whether you're on the block, my homegirl said one of the best ways if you're on the block closing a deal is at the strip club, and I always got a good laugh out of that. But also, the golf course is something that is serene, it's relaxing, it's just you and the links, and it's something universal that everybody can really get out there and just, it has a certain unidentifiable, intangible type of calm that elicits, we're all here, let's relax, let's chop it up, you know, and do what we got to do in the process.
Well, you also have to remember, you're spending 4 to 5 hours with someone.
Right.
I'm a non-drinker, but a lot of guys, they drink. You know, they have their cocktail or whatever, and they're pretty much relaxed on a golf course. But the one thing I can tell you is you can tell a lot about a gentleman or a young lady playing golf because if you're spending that kind of time with them, you'll see how they handle pressure. You'll see how they handle mistakes. If they move a ball, they cheat. I don't want to do business with a guy, whether it's a dollar or $1 million. I don't want to do a deal with a guy, and he's cheating on a golf course, or he gets disrespectful. You learn a lot about a person in one round of golf. You know whether you want to do business with them or not. That is a fact.
Oh, yeah.
You can't do that on a basketball court. You can't do that playing tennis or football.
Oh, yeah.
It's a testament of somebody's character.
It is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's also, too, because when you're looking at it 18 holes, and like you said, 4 or 5 hours, you're looking at all the nuances of it. You're looking at how when you're dealing with obstacles, whether you're dealing with when you're dealing with the bunkers, where you're dealing with water hazards, what is this person, how is this person going to strategize? How is this person going to approach things? Are they going to lose their cool, as you said? Are they going to remain calm? Are they going to, you know, even down to the caddy, how they treat their caddy in terms of people that are with them of it? Because like you said, it's such a wide range of emotions when you're out there in terms of being able to be prescient in preparation, you know, determining everything, how you're dealing, especially if you're playing in a team, you know, if you're playing match in terms of teams, you know, how everybody manages to communicate. You know, if one person may make a mistake, how does that person respond to that? It's a total team effort.
You mentioned bunkers and things like that. That's all life.
Yes, sir.
Bunkers
Absolutely.
Are trials and tribulations. I mean, everything that you've spoke about is so dead on because, you know, my sons, they're 21. They're 21-year-old twins, but they've had a golf club in their hand from a very young age. But I often do or treat a lot of stories or things we go through, I equate it back to the game of golf. And, you know, I've been toying with a book dealing with golf for young inner city kids or just any kid. It doesn't matter about inner city. It's just we happen to be at a quote-unquote a minority of the game because golf is expensive. People think that golf is so expensive, but yet it is, but it's not, because a lot of times you can get a lot of equipment donated and things of that, and that's what we're trying to bridge the gap nationwide in doing. And again, people think minority is just black. It's not. If you look up the true definition of minority, it is definitely not that. Now, we don't care who joins, but that's our mission. Minority Golf Association, I founded probably 8 years ago, and we concentrate on the ninth hole. And here's what I mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
We concentrate on getting you discounts. We concentrate on getting you great lessons, great discounts on equipment, whether it's almost like a AAA card or AARP card. I say AARP because I'm 55, but, you know, almost like a discount club card. And in doing so, we want to help as many people as we can get to the game of golf. And, again, we got to make it more fun, more excitable. Of course, Tiger Woods, everybody knows Tiger Woods. But long before Tiger Woods came about, he made the game more exciting. But before he came about, a lot of African Americans and Hispanics, Asians were playing the game of golf. They were.
Such as Charlie Sipper, Lee Elder, Althea Gibson, who also played golf, I mean tennis as well as golf, Calvin Peet, Brené Powell,
Yes, and you're absolutely right. And you know what? Like Brené Powell, man, you want to talk about just a long list of just greats you've named. That inspires me more to keep this association going. Everybody that I've met through that little ball, everyone that I've met through that little ball has – I have gained so much, not only respect for, but respect for their business, their field. And again, golf has allowed me to get into technology, it's real estate, whatever. You know, I've had my trials and tribulations, but the one thing that has remained the same is that game of golf, that little ball.
Yeah.
It's the foundation. You always go back to the foundation.
Yes.
And it's always about being able to swing for, you know, making that hole in one. Now, Sherrod, your backstory is just tremendous. You know, you being from Flint, Michigan. And we're going to get more into that as well, because you also, because this is, while we do hip hop on this show, we're not exclusively to hip hop, but you came, but you knew one of the hip hop legends along the way. First off, tell us about, you know, your background in terms of you growing up and, you know, how you eventually found your way to it.
Well, I grew up in Flint, Michigan, and, you know, went to Flint Powers. It's a Catholic school here in town, but I ran with the rich kids during the day. And I came home and lived with the gangsters at night. So I had a balance. And I didn't see it looking back. I didn't see it looking forward. I see it now looking backwards. So I knew the kids. I knew the rich kids, the lawyers, you know, the parents, lawyers, well-to-do. But I came home and I knew, you know, a lot of the gangsters in the neighborhood. And in bridging the two, there's really no difference except for the economic, you know, position in the lives. I learned, went to college after high school, went to Saginaw Valley. After going to Saginaw Valley, I then went to, just wanted to be in business. After going into business, dibble and dabble with, from power washing to, you know, I worked at Denny's restaurant for one night. Realized I didn't want to work that hard. But, you know, I just wanted to start my own business. And I had a couple buddies in a local band, Ready for the World, which had hit songs like Oh Sheila, Digital Display back in the 80s, but learned the business side of it. So after learning the business side of things, meeting Eric Breed, you know him as MC Breed. MC Breed, you know, after following him and watching him and learning how to do a contract and how not to do a contract, I got involved with two of the members of Ready for the World, Willie Triplett and Gerald Valentine, and we started a record label called Track Records. We didn't want to do a label deal, so we did a distribution deal, a 60-40 split. We own all of our all the rights to all the music. Yep,
right.
All the masters were still ours, where Ready for the World was splitting a penny six ways. So I learned what is a good deal and what's a bad deal. and they were really getting screwed in their deal. You know, the only guys getting rich is the manager and the record company. So
right.
After learning that, we had great success in that arena. But the one thing that I learned is the music game, as you know, it's Hollywood. It's show business. A lot of guys in the industry, you know, they embellish a lot of. Everybody wants to be a star, and I get it. So you fake it till you make it. So what we did was we said, okay, we'll get in this business and stay in this business. I started buying real estate. So as I started buying real estate, I just wanted to diversify in a couple of different things because I knew it wouldn't last. But it goes back to almost like the like rich dad, poor dad. I had some very good, very, very, very good influences in my life as far as the, you know, hey, what is real? Real estate. 98% of the millionaires in this country is from real estate. Real estate is slow money. As Jay-Z said, it's slow money. It's whole money, but it's for sure money. That is a fact.
Right.
So when we made money off of Top Authority, we end up losing money off of an artist called Tavares. We paid Coolio.
Yeah, I remember Top Authority. Had a song called I Can't Hear You, right?
I'm sorry?
Top Authority, I remember that. I think he had a song called I Can't Hear You, right?
No, Top Authority, they had two albums. I don't know if you ever heard of the Dayton family. They're from Flint, Michigan, too. Well, the Dayton family, tremendous group. They were more local, and it's funny because us being from Flint, the frustration was always the Dayton family had local notoriety.
Yeah, with bootlegging
we had
and all of them.
Nation
yeah.
notoriety. And with Top Authority, the great thing about it was, you know, we look up one day and Too Short is on Rap City with a T-shirt on of Top Authority. We had sent out a bunch of promo gear, and the rest was history. And when Bree did his album with Tupac Shakur,
I gotta
when he
get
did
mine.
That album, yeah, I gotta get mine. When he did that, that really set us in a great position. But again, we worked with the late great Dick Griffey, who had Solar Records through, you know, he had Lakeside, Babyface, Dr. Dre, Snoop.
The man
who was the catalyst.
Yeah.
Exactly. Dick Griffey is, when I tell you, larger than life, that he does not get his recognition. I have to pay homage to him in teaching us the game. He did.
Oh, wow. Now,
yeah, Dick Griffey, he set the L.A. He set the actual music scene in L.A. Well, really worldwide for black music with Don Cornelius
okay.
with Soul Train. He was a part of that.
Oh, man.
And Griffey quick was pause. A very powerful, very influential figure.
Yes, he was.
He
quick
actually,
pause.
People
yeah.
don't understand,
oh, go ahead,
he brought the gangs together. He brought the Crips and Bloods together. That's how he got Suge Knight under his wing.
Yeah. Quick pause, y'all, because for those that are listening out there, Sherrod just dropped like almost 30, 40 years of history on y'all in that alone in terms of how, I mean, it's crazy, you know, because we're working on getting Bootleg on the show, actually. Shout out to Pittsburgh Pat, you know, a friend of ours, helping us get that done. I mean,
why didn't you tell me? I'll get him on the phone for you tomorrow.
Word.
Yeah, he had
we're here.
I think he had something that came up that day. Sometimes people get
okay.
in the mix. But
yeah.
No, Bootleg's a great guy, man. Those guys are tremendous talents, man. They've been around the Flint scene, and you know Flint has. You know, people give Flint, Michigan, a bad rap. But guys like him who's been through the street, been through the system, you know, had their hard knocks, those guys are well-respected. They are still. Don't let me talk in past tense. They're very well-respected. And, you know, they want to help the youth as well, not make the same mistakes that we all have in life.
And you know, Sherrod, we be remiss on two fronts in terms of not shouting out Flint on a lot of levels. In terms of, you know, of course, because I'm a college football nut, shout out, of course, Michigan State Spartans, go green. And of course, you know, some 6'8 guy, you know, played for the Lakers. I think you heard of him. Just became this legendary player. I think his name was like, what was it? Irvin Magic Johnson. Yeah.
No, here's the thing. Magic is from Lansing originally.
Okay, East Lansing. Okay.
But yeah, Lansing, okay, yeah, he's from East
right,
Lansing. He's 45 minutes away, but you got to remember Andre Rison, Atlanta Falcons. Jeff Greer, Milwaukee Bucks,
yes.
76ers. Yep. Mo Peterson, he played for Michigan State. Mo Cleaves,
Michigan
State.
Yeah.
Yep, Carissa Shields, she's a boxer. She's from Flint. Glenn
Tech
Rice, he's
hands.
From Flint.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah,
wow.
He does. I wouldn't tussle with it. But even from hockey, you have, you know, the Reynolds boys. You have, I mean, we per capita, we have made a stake in the professional. But look, I mean, look at Darrell, the boxer, Darrell Littles. I think I forget his last name, but no, his last name is Darrell. He's still on the scene boxing. I mean, we have some good legends, man. Some good legends.
I mean,
as a pitch coach,
you know, yeah.
Mark Ingram Senior, Mark Ingram Junior. I mean, you name
yeah.
it. These are some of our shining stars.
Wow, man. I mean, with Michigan in general, from Lansing, and, you know, of course, they call me T-Master of the Facts, but even I can, you know, make the mistakes. Thank you, Sherrod, for, you know, giving clarification.
No. A lot
of
people do. A lot of people get it. Yeah, no, that's no big deal. No worries.
Yeah. You know, but, I mean, what is it about Michigan in general that, I mean, from the Wolverines to Eastern Michigan, you know, to, you know, Michigan State to, you know, I mean, what is it about y'all out there, I mean, that it's just in that state in general? Because, of course, you know, we think of Detroit, we think of so many, the city of industry. We think about the Pistons, we think about the Lions, we think about Dave Bing when he was mayor, of course, Kwame Kilpatrick. It's just, but you all have so many rich stories, Eminem, Esham, you know, it's, but you all.
Esham, that brings back good memories. Esham. You know, Esham was one of the first. We met with Esham, and he was selling records out of his trunk before Master P was. And Esham's brother actually was a financial backer for Esham. Esham was actually the artist. Esham is probably, he's still eating off his CDs. A lot of people say, you know, Master P, yada, 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 and shouts go out to Master P, of course. But Esham was really one of the first. He's the godfather to, you know, people forget about Awesome Dre and the Hardcore Committee. Everybody, Eminem, they all, Royce the 5'9", they all have to pay homage to Esham. He was the forefather of that whole, you know, that whole generation, that whole spark. He inspired us.
Yeah. Shout out Source Magazine from 1999, because I have an issue. This is where Jay-Z was on the cover. It was like going into the, you know, this was like 99 before the millennium hit. And they actually did a story with Esham. And they talked about how, you know, big he was. And he was like, you know, there's rappers, and then there's legends, and then there's Esham. You know, because they always break it down into semicolons, you know, commas in terms
yes.
of trying to give a further illustration of how legendary this man's legacy is. And he was like, you know, and they said there's legends and there's Esham. Then they put the Insane Clown Posse used to open for him. You know, so this
yes.
guy, this guy was like really, really, really made out there in terms of, you know, of course, albums like Male Dominance, you know, of course, Natas, Nation Ahead of Time and Space. Yes, we're very
yes.
familiar
yes.
with him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not to
yes.
mention,
yes.
not to mention yes. that Esham, from what I heard, too, he was the first to put out a double album.
Well, not only was he the first, Eshan really saw ahead. See, the thing with Eshan was this. If he didn't have the money, the streets backed him. I mean, he could go into any dope house if he needed to get cash or any, you know, anywhere he needed. People was like, you know, stay out of trouble, man. Here's this, here's that. But Eshan really, really was just a pioneer of people wanted to see him succeed. And, you know, meeting him was probably one of the high points of our music, of our music career. That was from a boss standpoint. You see Rick Ross these days. You know, these are bosses. Don't get me wrong. They but you see how they diversified into other things, like Rick Ross with Wingstop and all the other ventures. We didn't have those opportunities as readily available as they do now. So you see a lot of it now with, you know, brand placement and things of that nature. We didn't have that, so we had to carve it out of the mud. Well, now it's, you know, I mean, look at Kanye. Kanye right now, he's built Yeezys off of his music. I mean, but he's in a slave contract. Believe me, he's in a slave contract with the music. But the music, that's why he went to gospel. The music does nothing more, is the gateway to numbers for the internet. That's really the backstory of it.
Yeah, and you know, because wow, we still haven't even got to the full golf yet, but we're loving this right now. So we're gonna stay with it, and we're just gonna go. We're just gonna organically let it get to the golf, because the music, the history you're giving us right now, Sherrod, is we're just gonna run with this like, you know, Dion, you know, running the kickoff back. Okay, so when we're talking about the industry now, because especially what, you know, you said about understanding contracts, you know, of course the legends that have come out of there. When you talk about the, because Kanye, you know, of course, like you said, in terms of what he's done with the Yeezy diversification in terms of fashion, but also going into gospel and everything. When he spoke on the contract in specific, what should artists understand in terms of when they're negotiating and then ultimately deciding if they are or are not going to sign on that paperwork?
Well, to give you a real analogy, I call it signer's remorse. I never forget when we signed Top Authority, the one thing that bothered me the most was it was always the drunk uncle who would say, hey, you owe him more money, you owe him more money, you owe him more money.
Yeah.
And my thing is, I used to power wash decks and take the money and pay the studio time. So I would say to the uncle, are you willing to go get a second mortgage on the house for your nephew? I'd say to the mother, are you willing to put the money up? Well, I'm willing to put the money up for your son's future or your nephew's future. Mm. If you can't match what I'm putting up, then I have the right to recoup my money first.
Mm.
My artists, even today, I can see them now, and they see me, they hug me, they respect me, because I never screwed them over. Because while they wanted to go do other things, I was always mother henning them. Hey, man, put the money up, you know, put the money up, put it in something. Well, I was able to eat off of the money, off of their reels, because they didn't put the money up and think about tomorrow. Most artists think about today, and that's it. I mean, you got rappers right now putting diamond studs in their forehead. You got a rapper right now, he put a 24-karat diamond ring, a diamond in his forehead, but yet you see guys like T-Pain going around getting his cars repossessed less than a month ago with all the hits he's had. There's no excuse for that. That's ill. Again, bad money managers being uneducated about your money.
Right.
That's what it's all about. They think of today. I mean, you can't go to the NBA and trust everybody. Look at LeBron James. LeBron says, look,
right,
I'm going to go bounce the ball. Hey, buddies, you're going to go to school for this. You're going to go to school for this. They do that in every other nationality, every other one except us. That's why we're the largest consumers and we don't own anything. That's why. That's
you know,
a fact.
And it's real. Because when we look at the situation, Sherrod, we see the financial literacy in the game is of the utmost imperative. We've talked to a lot of, through the hundreds of shows we've done, all the guests that we've been blessed to have, people we talk to on and off air. We talk, and situations we see in terms of articles. Once again, we will reiterate this on air, which you just so extraordinarily and explicitly put. A lot of these artists out here do not make as much money as everybody thinks that they do. You know, especially now with these 360 deals, you know, where the label is getting a piece of everything. Yeah.
Now, you know and understand, guys, you know and understand mm-hmm. that a 360 deal, you're nothing more than a employee of your own brand. Why would you sign? And I'm talking you guys. Why would you, any artist with the internet, if I'm an artist right now, if I'm an artist right today, remember something. Rick Ross's first three albums went to Trick Daddy. Trick Daddy signed him. A lot of people don't know and understand that. So Rick Ross says, look, I'm in a slave deal. I'm in a slave deal. But what I'm going to do is my music is going to be the vessel to do other things. That's why Rick Ross is as successful as he is. Remember something. Michael Jackson owned Eminem's catalog, some of his, Elvis Presley's, the Beatles, the Jackson 5, Barry White's, Little Richard. The list goes on and on and on and on. Because Michael learned early on in the game that owning the catalog is more important than performing. Now, let's fast forward that to today. Non-fungible tokens, NFTs. Artists have to control their NFTs, their music, their content. That 360 deal is an absolute slave. That is slavery all over again.
Yes, it is.
Digital slavery.
Yes, it is. And you know, when we for our listeners that really don't understand this in a full context, allow us to give you more history behind it. Because back in the day, artists, there was always an element of there was your show money, there was your label money, and your show money was untouchable. That was back in the day for what an artist did going on the road. Whatever they made on the road, that was theirs, and that was it. But now the game has changed to where it's corporate piracy on the artist. Like you said, Sherrod, you're becoming a slave to your brand, and it's like it's become criminally now a practice that these artists are not even going to get on a label until they actually sign a 360 where the label gets a piece of everything. They take a bite out of whatever you're doing. And conversely speaking, on this show, this is why we've always implored it's like this. On this show, we always try to give our artists, our fans, just in general, people we've had on give information. We've always said, you do what is best for you for what helps the vision you're trying to realize. If you want to be with a label, make sure you got a good label deal. But if you're going to be independent, make sure you understand the discipline, the tenacity, what it means in terms of running your own brand, being a boss. Because a lot of people talk that boss talk, but they don't have the discipline or the knowledge of understanding the nuances, the sacrifices, the dedication, the focus that is needed. They want to shine without the polish.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing is, being an entrepreneur, man, look, there's days, and I want to say to any entrepreneur out there,
mm-hmm.
every day I'm scared. Every day Rick Ross is scared. Every day every entrepreneur is scared. And I refer to Rick Ross because him and Dame Dash are two guys that I follow and I watch. Because I'll tell you something, P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, Sean Combs, he's just now buying a lot of his own masters back, just now. People didn't understand and respect Master P when he owns his masters from day one to now. That's why he's made so much money. He controls his own narrative. Now, you know, you hear always artists are upset again. Signer's remorse. You know, you can't, you got to let the guy who put the money up recoup his money. You got to do it. You know, and in the money you do make, it's like any business, man. You put money in today, you're not going to make any money. You're not going to make any money for a few years. You're not going to, you know, in today's, yeah, you could hit one big deal, but you got to plan out. You got to plan the future of it. You know, you can't, you got to plant a seed today to grow a tree for tomorrow and the next day. That's just a fact.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not instant overnight. It's just not that way. And the guys, you know, a lot of artists didn't understand what Michael Jackson, if people really want to know and understand the power of ownership, go watch what Michael Jackson did in the music industry. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I can tell you he owned so many masters and he bought so many catalogs that Sony had to do a deal with him. They had to do a deal. They had to.
Because, and once again, we're going to go further into this conversation, Sherrod, because the situation that Sherrod is talking about, y'all, had to do in 1987. This was supposedly why him and Paul McCartney had a bit of an issue. If I'm, you know, and if I'm wrong, y'all can correct us.
You're absolutely correct.
Because Michael bought the Beatles catalog from Apple Records for $47 million, which Paul was upset about. This is why him and Paul had that falling out behind that. But Michael,
do you know why he was upset with me?
Go ahead, please speak on it.
No, do you know why he was upset with me?
Well, I'm assuming because Michael bought his music, but if there's something else.
No, he taught Michael Jackson. Paul McCartney taught him the game. Michael just parlayed it. That's what happened.
Right.
The Beatles catalog was, when it went up for auction, they bought it from Yoko Ono. I may be saying her name wrong. But
Yoko
she
ono,
controlled
John
all
Lennon
the Beatles catalog.
Yeah.
Yoko Ono. Yes. She bought, Michael bought the catalog pretty much from her. I mean, that's
from
just business 101.
He was still married to her, yeah. Yeah, but John Lennon's
exactly.
wife,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, when he died, she...
Right.
sold the controlling interest in it. And that's what he
wow.
said. Yeah. It was a gangster move, but, you know, people think Michael Jackson was just a soft-spoken weirdo. He was not.
He didn't need anything.
I've never met him, but he was shrewd. He was shrewd.
And we know that was an act right there. He put the soft voice on.
Yes.
And he could manipulate them to where they were like, oh, we could run over this dude. He's soft. And that paperwork get handled.
Yep.
They're like, oh, he done got me.
you know, a great attorney, Stephen A. Finegood, who's been my friend and attorney for many, many years, he always told me something that don't argue with anybody. People only understand paperwork. They only understand paperwork. That paperwork is solid. See, people try to start a business already at L instead of starting at A to get to Z. You have to start a business in your foundation right. So a lot of times when you go do deals with these record labels, their paperwork is set out to screw you from day one. When they hand you a contract, it's like doing a deal with the devil. And people don't understand that. Okay, they give you, okay, hey, I'll give you $1 million up front. Well, he's already done a branding deal for $10 million behind the scenes. So it's not conducive for you. It's not to your advantage. It's not in any business. Nobody's going to – very rarely do you go into business with somebody that's saying, okay, look, I want to do what's best for you. JCPenney's never cared what Sears was doing after 5 o'clock. They were for Sears. They were for JCPenney. It's business. It's capitalism.
Capitalism
has
no
soul. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the bottom line is people get upset with guys. You remember when Martin Shkreli was selling the AIDS drug for, he bought it for X amount of dollars and he sold it for outrageous
price. And
then
jacked the price.
You remember that not long ago?
Bro. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Right.
Went to prison.
You know what it is?
Right.
What it, But do you remember what his answer was? He says, look, my obligation is to my shareholders. And that's true, because we're in a capitalistic society. Now, what he said was politically absolutely wrong. But what he meant, what he said was what he really meant. His shareholders want profit. These record labels, Sony, EMI, Warner Brothers, Disney, they want profits. They don't care how they get it. They want profit. You think they care now that they're exploiting young kids to, whether it be homosexuality, whether it be, you know, whatever it is, violence, you know, when we were growing up. Even now, it's even worse. They don't care. They're selling records. Beefs, they're selling records. Think about it.
It's this real, Sherrod, because one thing about it, we love the culture. I was having a conversation with my barber. Shout out Rob Pratt of Cut Style Rob in Chesapeake, Virginia. That's my family, been my barber for almost 20 years. And we had a spirited discussion about where the culture is at today in terms of, you know, because he's it within about where it is with what is being put out there. While I understand, because his thing is hip hop culture is the most destructive thing to black people, and my thing is we've had destructive elements in it, but it is a culture. It is not destructive, but it is what is being marketed right now, because we're all of us in this cipher right now are older. So we came up at a time where the music was different in terms of what was being pushed, because while you still had a lot of gangster rap, you had a lot of Wall Street Tales, there was a balance. And what we're seeing now is that it's no more balance. It's strictly like these kids are being inundated. And disclaimer, because none of us here are against free speech or against hip-hop culture, but we're just concerned about, it's like these kids don't have, it's like they're not being exposed to anything else in terms of understanding the true scope and beauty, the varied diversity of what this rich culture is. And that they just think it's reduced, it's not hip-hop what is being promoted in terms of violence. It's not, you know, the weird stuff that's going on, that's not hip-hop, you know. You know what I'm saying?
They had street activity already with them before coming in.
Exactly. You know, because
let me say this to you too. If you can play a video game, you can be a digital engineer of some sort. If you can play Call of Duty all day, you can create a game. The diversity we have to do now is we have to stop being the artist and become the boss. You know, I used to tell my twins all the time, you know, you're 5'5", 5'6", twins. I want you to concentrate on owning the team, not playing for the team. That's why when LeBron made the choice to switch teams, everybody got upset with him. But his thing is, when an owner gets done with me, he can throw me to another team. Well, I want to make my own moves. You got to love and respect that man for that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like now, if we control the platform, I'll give an example of something. My sons, and I often refer to them because they're my only children, but they created a digital search engine, a search engine for, it's called Yivster, Yivster. It is a search engine, a video search engine that combines YouTube, Twitch, Vimeo, and Dailymotion all in one platform.
My thing to them was, they said,
Dad, look. They said, Dad, look. We see the content. So let's say you punch in, Prince. Well, what's not showing on Vimeo is on YouTube. What's on YouTube, it may not be on Twitch. So it covers all in one. But what I'm trying to tell other young youth or any other entrepreneur out there is be the brand, not the band. Be the controller of the narrative, of the message. That's the difference. Mark Zuckerberg, people don't understand, Zuckerberg is a communications company. He's a media company. We're the product. Whenever you're on Facebook, Instagram, we're the product. And, again, we are the largest consumers of African American, and we don't own any no real platforms. Guys like Tariq Nasheed, they teach that, but a lot of people are not listening. That's look, Asian community, they stick together. Hispanics, they stick together. African Americans, we just got to stick together more. We have to.
Yeah.
We have
to. You know,
that's real. That's real boss.
Yeah, and it's real, Shavar, because shout out to Sauce Walker, the Sauce Factory, one of the illest MCs out of Houston, Texas, that some of y'all might have not heard of, you know, Mr. Uwe himself. Sauce had a YouTube video where he was talking, and he said something really profound. He was like, black people don't see the value in working together. And, you know, when you're looking at the you know, it's like we all are in the same struggle trying to get the shiniest penny, you know, in terms of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go ahead, please.
No, you're absolutely dead on. I mean, you ought to write a book on this.
speaking of books, because when you spoke on Rick Ross, and, of course, got to shout out all the crew, Whole Slab, Jeter K, 183rd, you know, all of them. You know, Ross writing his book, for those that have not read The Perfect Day to Boss Up and Hurricanes, Rose broke down his whole life. Hurricanes was his life story, and he broke down his whole life story. That was his memoir. Shout out to Neil Martinez Belkin, who co-wrote it, who wrote both of those books with him. The Perfect Day to Boss Up was Ross's manual on just how to expand your empire in terms of having the scope and the vision. Great read. And when you spoke about it in terms of what was going on, what you said earlier about Trick Daddy Hassan Ross, Sherrod, I think that's what you're alluding to, the days when he was on Slip and Slide, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Yes,
and
sir.
Yeah, and how he was, because Ross talked about that in his book, you know, about, because it's crazy how this all comes back around, because it's about patience, because Ross talked about in his book about how long it took him to get on in terms of, like, it was 10 years before, you know, from when he started in 96 in earnest to 2006 when he released Port of Miami, his first major label album.
He paid those dues. He's paid those dues.
Yeah, you know, but it's also a situation, too, when you spoke on it, because this is where it gets tricky, because a lot of people have to understand in terms of when you sign a label deal, how much somebody you may still owe them. Like, Suge Knight, this was years ago when he was in a – he did it. XXL Magazine did an interview with him. I think it was XXL or Source Magazine, but they did an interview. So Suge was talking about, you know, how Snoop had talked about he was making his – he called his album The Last Meal because – not yeah, The Last Meal because it came out in 2000. So he was about how that – you know, because Snoop has said people weren't going to be eating off of him anymore. And Suge said, well, I'm here to let you know that Suge Knight is going to be eating off of you for a very long time, at least for three or four more albums. Now, people thought back in 1998 when Master P bought that contract from Suge because he paid $3 million to get Snoop out of it, people thought that was it. Sherrod, you are a savvy, you know, veteran of the swing at golf as well as swinging in the industry of knowing how this game is played. Please tell people, our audience out there, how that business really works, that even when that check is cut, there's still other cuts that happen, their cuts happen as well in terms of percentages, points, all of that.
Well, look at Drake's contract. I'll give you the best example in the world. Drake probably signed the worst deal Drake was signed to people. See, the industry got mad at Meek Mill when he told the truth. He told the absolute truth. This guy's eating off this guy, he's eating off this guy. It all led back to Jay Prince's son, who discovered Drake in the beginning.
Jazz.
If you look back at that contract, and right, if you look at the levels of that contract, the levels of Drake's contract, Drake is seventh in line to his own likeness. People don't realize that. He's sixth or seventh to get paid on his own brand. Now think about that.
And it's crazy, Sherrod. Shameless plug again, because on Off the Cuff Radio, we plug everything in terms of what we love. If y'all have not picked up Jay Prince's book, The Art of Science of Respect, pick that up too.
Because
Jay Prince talked about that, and on Off the Cuff, one thing about it, we do not chatty patty. We are not gossip. We always, to the best of our journalistic standards and integrity, because we're always going to be honest, we're going to be real, and we always, most importantly, even though we can make mistakes at times, we always make it a point to try to get it right. So what I'm about to say here is something that came directly from the book about it. Now, what Sherrod is saying is absolutely true about because Jazz Prince is the one that brought Drake into the game in terms of, because he initially brought him to rap a lot, but Jay Prince decided maybe Cash Money might be a better fit. So this is how Drake ends up on Cash Money, which would have the subsidiary Young Money. Now, this is where it gets dicey. Now, this is all in the book, y'all, so anything we're saying here is not just blowing smoke. This really happened. So what happens is, essentially, Drake goes on, becomes a big star, and Jazz and Jay Prince don't get their money from Birdman. Jay Prince writes about this in the book, that he is not being paid, and that he had to call Birdman a couple of times, and Birdman paid him, shot him off a couple million dollars, but Jay Prince wrote, "Don't spoon feed me my money. Pay me all of what you owe me."
That's right. That's right. And that's not a guy you want to be in. That's not a guy you want to be in an IOU with.
No. No, it is not.
Sure, he got all that money.
That's right. And you're right. You're right.
Yeah, but this goes back like 7-8 years in terms of this whole thing, because at the time of the book, when it came out 3-4 years ago, they were still in litigation about it in terms of, you know, how much the millions are untold in terms of what, you know, Jazz is owed. And Jay Prince wrote in that book explicitly, you're not going to jerk me and my son in terms of what you owe us. Because I'm not going to spoil all of the book for y'all, but y'all need to pick it up and read that whole story, that whole passage about it, because it's insane. When you're talking about it, because let's go explore that further, Sherrod, what you were talking about being in line in terms of what you're getting, because Drake isn't the first artist this has happened to. How does this happen
through the centuries. If it wasn't for Michael Jackson, Little Richard would have died broke. A lot of people don't know this. Michael Jackson owned all of Little Richard's, when he bought catalogs, Little Richard's catalog was in one of the, was in one of the packages. And as he bought his catalog, he gave him his catalog. He gave it to him before he passed. He gave it to him. Because, you know, remember when Little Richard used to always say, he copied me, he copied that for me, yada, yada, yada. Michael learned, Ray Charles, James Brown, these guys own their own catalog. Ray Charles, of all people, was one of the first. So when Michael Jackson gave him that power in his catalog, now his family can eat forever. But remember, how many artists die broke? Tupac was really broke when he died. He really was. He was down $150,000. Come on,
we've
man.
Heard
broke
that
for
story.
What he's supposed
we've
to
heard that story.
Absolutely. MC Breed, true story. Do you remember years ago, back in the 80s, they had a small record label called Ichiban?
Yeah,
Ichiban was out of Atlanta.
They dropped his first song, Ain't No Future in Your Front End.
Absolutely. But what Breed was doing, Breed would go out, do a deal here, do a deal there. Ichiban, through all those contracts, had a lifetime contract on Eric. And I used to tell Eric, Eric, I don't know if I want to jump on you first or jump on your lawyer. But his lawyer was Ichiban's lawyer. I mean, that's conflict of interest all day long.
Yeah.
All day long. But, again, if we don't know better, we cannot do better. We cannot do better. If we're going to build an empire, and, again, it goes back to starting your business. I don't care if it's hair care. I don't care if it's a record label. I don't care what it is. The one thing I can tell you is you start it right. You do it right. You do it legally. You set up your entities right. You go in with the right legal representation that you know has your back. Then you proceed. Because guess what? If you may have to walk away from a couple of deals. You just may have to. You just may have to if it's not a right fit. Because remember, Jimmy Iovine told Master P, he says, I'll give you $1 million. He says, you'll never do any business in the music industry if you don't do a deal with me. Well, we know how that turned out for Master P. But if he had taken that million dollars, Jimmy Iovine's kids would be in prep school somewhere off of Master P's masters. Look at George Clinton with Parliament. A older Jewish family owns all of Parliament. Now think about the history of Parliament Funkadelic. Think about it a minute. Now a Jewish family holds the catalog to all of George Clinton's stuff. He gets the road money, like you said, but he doesn't get the residual of Flashlight, The Brides of Funkenstein. Come on, man. Think about it.
And that's
now, do you think the eager to cash out is the reason why we don't have ownership? Because we seen how Jay-Z, he had Title and he cashed out, and I think he sold that to the guy that owns Twitter, I believe. And then you have the verses that Swizz Beatz and Timbaland had, and they sold that to Thriller.
Well, I'm going to explain from just my experience of what you just said, and it holds true. Jay-Z understood and understands corporate business, where guys like Damon Dash wants to run in and raise havoc. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and he's a true, true entrepreneur. I mean, he is the fiber of American black business. But Jay-Z understood how to move in partnerships. See,
right.
Jay-Z has aligned himself with great partners. Jay-Z didn't own Tidal. He partnered with Tidal. He brought in, he sold part of it to, I want to say Sprint or someone like that. I forgot. I read it, but I can't remember what it was. But he understood the importance of partnerships. So if you look at all of Jay-Z's deals, Google all of Jay-Z's deals, and look how strategically he placed himself. When he did the New Jersey Nets, he got a piece of it. When he did Title, he got a piece of it. Everything he's doing now, he has a piece of it. I don't like partners because I don't feel that if a partner's a marriage. A partner's a marriage. But sometimes you have to file. I have the Master P approach. He has the corporate, hey, I get 17% here. I do it with, whatever. But look at Sean John with Puff. With P. Diddy. P. Diddy never really owned that. Russell Simmons at one point didn't even own Fat Farm or even Baby Farm. They end up buying it back out of bankruptcy. Sean Combs right now is buying Sean John back out of bankruptcy. He's buying it back for pennies on the dollar, but he's now buying it to get ownership back. That's what he's doing. That's a fact.
And that's wild. That's wild because when you look at it from an entrepreneurship level, Sherrod, because when we talk about Jay-Z, of course, one of the brains behind that is John Mennelly. That was one of Jay-Z's.
Yes.
I think John
yes.
is still working with Jay as well. When you look at Master P, for those who really know P's story, everybody thinks it starts in New Orleans. Well, yeah, it does, because he was born in there, you know, Third Ward, Calio, you know, uptown. But the real story comes when he moves to Richmond, California, where Uncle St. Charles teaches him the game. And Uncle St. Charles is the mentor to the Bay legends, like shout out Uncle E 40, Stick With It, who has basically ran it for over 30 years. At, you know, Stick With It having a distribution deal with Jive. But everything 40 does, 40 Water does, is all him in terms of the, it's all in house. You know, so, you know, P learned this early at the onset of his business after that inheritance he got about how to, because P always said, I have the 97 Source magazine with him on the cover and the 97 XXL issue, you know, the first ever XXL issue they did, and they talked about it with P. Talked about in both of those issues about how he learned the business, and he said, "I learned it from the ground up." He's like, "All these things I have, the Rolexes, the cars, I own all of that." He's like, "If I ever go broke, I'll trade all that shit again and start over from and start all over again."
Absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely.
But there was no Google at the time, too, so you had to really learn it from the ground up.
Well, and if you think about it right now, this is why I got into business development. I could take an artist right now and have him set up from a DBA through all his social media with the EIN number in 1 hour. My company, Engine Shark, is basically Google on steroids, and I'm giving a shameless plug, of course. But
go ahead, please.
I can have an artist set up in 1 hour. You don't need a label nowadays. You got the internet. I tell my sons all the time, don't ever ask me a question when you can pull your phone out and Google it. Don't ever answer me, I don't know. Don't ever answer me, I don't know. Have something that we never had. You can Google it in 2 seconds. We had to go to a library, wait for the library to open, and go get an encyclopedia or call some uncle or read it. And we all know news is however the writer portrays it. You know, he stirs the narrative. You don't have to wait on – I mean, look what you guys are doing. You guys are educating to the heart of America, not just blacks, because your audience is diverse. So
we appreciate
nowadays
it.
You don't have to wait for ABC, NBC, CBS. You guys are on the pulse. You guys are the new black entertainment tonight. You guys are the new BETs. A lot of people didn't even realize BET was not owned. Ted Turner damn near owned all of BET. He was really the equal partner to Bob Johnson and his wife. People don't know that.
I didn't know. I was today years old when I found this out.
Yes. Yes. When they sold that company for $5 billion. Yeah,
right.
When they sold that company for $5 billion.
Right.
Through that divorce, mm-hmm. He got a bill, she got a bill, and Ted Turner took the rest.
That
you don't
was
have to pay enough bills.
Yeah, that was the Viacom sale, I believe. You know, after it was sold. Because it's funny because we bring it all the way back around because we're going to get back to what you're saying currently, but also bring it back around because BET, when we look at how it was from the onset of the programming, it was so diverse in terms of shout out Rap City, you know, shout out, you know, Video Vibrations, Video Soul, Donnie Simpson, Sherry Carter, Madeline Woods, Courtland Malloy, Ed Gordon, you know, Bev Smith, you know, Rachel, everybody, you know, everybody from that old school that was there, you know, Lisa Walker, of course, Mos Def was on there back in the day, you know, hosting Teen Summit, all that. So you see what was going on back in the day in terms of the programming, and it's like after it was sold, it changed.
None of that.
When Sumner Redstone of Viacom, people don't know, Blockbuster is his claim to fame. He controlled the media. If you notice how it's swung, BET started getting more diverse, which is okay, but it became more short-oriented. Now, if you look at now, look at TV now, or on the Internet, black, what is it called? Black, it's something, it's a new BNC. I don't know what it's called. It's Black National something. They just, they're owned now. Their majority stakeholder is an Indian gentleman, Asian, whatever you want to call it, but he controls the stock of it. They just laid off a ton of people. So, again, we're not controlling our own narrative. That's why we have to jump behind you. We have to jump behind anybody that is spreading a positive black message and not, you know, not coerced by the mainstream of, you know, planning, you know, divisiveness in the black culture. I mean, that's just a fact. It's just a fact. You know, YouTube, I mean, you don't have to, you know, look at RZA Islam. RZA Islam, he started speaking on certain subjects. They didn't like it. They cut him off. Everybody else, they cut him off. Even Donald Trump, they didn't like what he was saying, cut him off. So, again, they can control what they can, but the Internet is your wheelhouse. It is your playground. You know, you guys, this content right here lives on for another 1,000 years. I mean, think about it.
Yeah. And one thing about what we've tried to do with this, this is, you know, of course, King's baby, you know, from when he started this 7 years ago. You know, and me coming on, you know, shout out our co-host, Silla, out of Sandman, you know, Lady Chinchilla, all of us. You know, what we've tried to do is we want to be a positive and real representation of black excellence in terms of all aspects of academics, dialogue, respect for ourselves and the culture, and respect for the people that come on. We've always said our vision is to be as real and visceral as possible without the viciousness and vitriol. We want to be sincere without being savage, although we have got savage on a few people for stupidity.
Right.
That's understandable.
Right, you know, because we had a skit called The Guillotine where we put people's heads on it, and it's like we're stupidity that they've done.
Oh, man, that was the wild startup days. Yeah. We might have to bring that back for 2022.
Yeah, because we dropped the hammer on a couple of people, but one thing about it is we always wanted to make sure that because black people, we've fallen into this very dangerous relationship with drama, discord, and dysfunction, and not necessarily in that order. We're having a multi-relationship with all the elements that are acerbic and destructive to us. And when we look at the culture right now, we're seeing situations where everybody thinks that it's cool to be a goon, it's okay to tote a gun and just shoot somebody just because, you know, it's okay to get out there and do stupid stunts because that's called going viral. I'm like, what happened to pushing about, you know, living, because, you know, to see it on social media, Sherrod, everybody's life is lit. Everybody's at a party. Everybody is the biggest drug dealer. Everybody got the most guns. Everybody done killed the most people. But, you know, it's like, you know, they
go over the top.
I mean, yeah.
Why do you think World Star sold for so much money? People knocking people out. They like the drug. They love chaos. They love the coonery. They love it. They love it. They love it. They love it. And other races look at us as entertainment. Oh, look at the show monkeys. Look at them. Look at them. Instead of us building with young men like yourselves and other entrepreneurs linking up, listen, we could single-handedly, economically shut the entire, any industry we want down. If you listen to Dr. Claude Anderson, read his books, which guys like Tariq Nasheed talk about. If you look at and read that, the power we have in our wallets. Right now, if you look on any social media, the first thing a guy does, and the most insulting thing I've seen is Ralph Lauren put the biggest horse on a shirt that he could. Now, Ralph has his money. And I used to ask, and again,
right.
I always refer back to my sons because I'm giving you, I try to tell them I do it in real time. What makes Ralph's logo more important than yours? Ralph don't, Ralph, Tommy, all these guys, they don't care about you. But the power of your own brand, what's more important to you? Your brand. You know, even if you have to go get if you have to stitch it on yourself, that's your brand. I want you guys to do this. The next time you're driving down the road, and this is not a racist thing or anything, but I'll tell you something I tell my sons, and I probably shouldn't say this, but it's not racial, but it's a point proven. The next time you're driving down the road, you see a white guy with his girl in the car. He has a sticker on the side of the truck. Truck is kind of beat up. She's right next to him. He's got his sign, you know, such and such tree hauling, or Hispanic guy.
Right.
They
right,
believe
right,
in that company.
Right.
Now, you watch them 2 years later, 5 years later, now they got 4 or 5 trucks. They got a business.
Absolutely.
So that little
Absolutely.
Sign that was on the side of their truck, now it's lit up. I've seen too many people in Flint or around the country. I've seen them grow their businesses, and we don't do it in our own community enough because we don't support each other. We don't. We don't. We don't. We don't.
It's true. And it's something where, you know, it's crazy you say that, Sherrod, because, you know, it's always a situation where we want to try to, quote-unquote, get the homeboy discount because, you know, well, you know, as black people got to stick together, or if the service is bad, we're like, well, I ain't never doing another black-owned business again. I'm like, you can't – there's going to be bad business anywhere. There's going to be shitty service no matter where you go. But to basically try to paint that with a broad brush that all black businesses are delinquent, irresponsible, and unprofessional because of a bad experience with one, that's just atrociously, that's a gross misrepresentation and an assumption that is rooted in nothing but self-hate for your people. Because it's like you're showing you don't believe in us enough to understand the plight of what we all are going through as African Americans in this country. And then to try to ask for a discount, I'm like, look, I appreciate the patronage and love, but love doesn't pay my bills. Patronage at full price does, you know.
Well, not only what you're saying is true. Not only what you're saying is very, 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 very strong. The one thing I can tell you is this. I've never walked up to a bank and said, hi, Mr. Banker, I would like to borrow against my street cred, because that doesn't work. if you can walk in a bank and put your street cred up, no, they want a deed or they want a property that you have
collateral.
Equity in.
Yeah, they want
Absolutely.
Real collateral.
Absolutely. How many guys do you know have died? Oh, he was the man, blah, blah, blah. You have to do a GoFundMe for him. You got to teach
right.
these kids burial insurance. You got to teach these kids real estate. You got to teach these kids, and when I say kids, I'm 55, so when I say kids,
Understood.
Young entrepreneurs.
Understood.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, a guy will have five or six cars in his driveway and don't have health insurance. I mean, come on,
True.
Man. I mean, that's just
yeah.
that's coonery business, man. And I call our own people out because I'm so sick of. The one thing I'm very much sick of in our own community, and I call our own community out, I'm so sick of us blaming everybody else, but we won't call a foul on us, on ourselves. That's what bothers me about African Americans. That's what bothers me the most. You can learn from anybody, any race.
Exactly. And a lot of times there is so much – it's a deeper issue – when we look at what goes on in the hood in terms of violence, when we look at it in terms of lack of education, because the chasm is so wide. We look at how when we talk about black crime, especially y'all, Dr. Michael Eric Dyson made a great point about it. He's like, when you're dealing with it, because I'm going somewhere with it, he said basically it's nothing but a term that was coined, because he said he acknowledges there's a problem, but he's like, the thing was, that's a racial divide that was caught up to try to make us, to try to make it look like we're more savages than everybody else. He's like, the real thing is this community on community violence, because violence happens in the direct vicinity of the occupants in it, in terms of the demographic. Now, going further with it, when we get to that element of it, we're looking at, you got black people that are angry at other black people for making it out the ghetto and doing something. And it's almost like we're certain people who are upwardly mobile, who really worked hard. It's like there's still that thing of, well, you know, how many times have we heard this? You know, well, such and such think they all that because, oh, well, they ain't nothing. They ain't going to school. They think they're better. I'm like, well, they're trying to be, and oh, this burns me up more than anything. Oh, they're trying to be white. I'm like, well, excuse the fuck out of me. I'm like, the last time I checked, education is something for everybody, and it's not limited to one ethnicity. It's universal. There is no racial qualifier on knowledge.
I've never seen a book in my reading. Now, I'm not talking about anybody else's reading, but I never saw a book that says for blacks only or for whites only. Education is universal. They always said it, and you guys know, if you want to hide it from one of us, you put it in a book, because we're not going to look there. Jada Kiss told you that. You want to hide it from one of us, put it in a book. That's the last place we'll look. And that's sad, because I was reading something, and they said Warren Buffett reads, you know, X amount of hours a day. Well, the more you read, the luckier you get, man, in whatever your field is. If Kim Kardashian can go and pass the bar exam, if she can go do that, and her claim to fame is a sex tape, not only is she reinventing herself, but she still can learn. She's still making that pivot.
Yes.
She understands branding. You cannot tell me that some of these young sisters is out here on WorldStar wearing shower caps in these different places and doing things that are just very, very negative to the community. These girls are really, really smart. They just watch the wrong stuff, man. They pour the wrong elements into their minds, man. And it goes back to bad programming. It goes back to watching bad programming. But shows like yours build the community. That's why you won't get as many likes
DJ
he does
Glass.
All the shit. He started off doing the Chicago it'll come to me, but my point, DJ Academic, all he talks about is chaos. You guys are talking about something positive, but Ratchet wins. Ratchet wins in today's society, because we're so used to seeing, we love a train wreck. We love it. And that's the unfortunate part, instead of empowering our people. We got to have more of you guys, man. You guys are a beacon of great light to the community, to the nation, to the world, in what you're spreading. We have to jump behind you, because the better I make you look, the better I look. And that's how other cultures think, man.
Yeah. I mean, Sherrod, we appreciate this, because this is all we've – one thing about it with what we do and yes, I'm going to shamelessly plug my brother King again, because I'm 43 years old. A lot of people said that I was that this was something I could do, but I never believed in. I never really thought that I really had that I could do it, you know. But King, Sandman, Chinchilla, they brought me in, and they gave me confidence to believe. I can't ever thank them enough for what they've done, because it's enabled me to, because I haven't reached my full potential, but it's helped me to unlock a gift that I have, or that I always had, and then to meet people like yourself. Because when you talk about the entrepreneurial nature of it, this show is, we love this. We love doing what we do. We feel honored, and but people don't understand what this takes. That we're not multimillionaires. Yeah, we reach out to people. We talk to managers. We reach out to
guys. You forgot one word. Yes.
What's that?
You're not millionaires yet. Speak it into existence. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, we're claiming it for next year. But people like yourself, because we've reached out to a lot of people who didn't think we were the biggest platform that didn't want to come on, which is why people like yourself, we are so honored and privileged to have on the show because, you know, because our thing is if somebody sees us, listens to us, and believes in what we're doing to where they want to come on, that shows we're doing something right. We're almost at 500 shows. We're probably going to hit that mark halfway next year. We have never had a guest come on the show say that they hated it. We got people, Shout the Trop and Glasses Malone, most notably, because those are two artists among many who have said they want to come back on, you know. So it's like
solid guy.
I would love to come back on. Look, you guys are doing positive stuff, man. Listen, anybody that does, and I want to say this to you. Well, of course, I want to say this to you. Anybody that doesn't support you, remember one thing. Every day, you never, and I want you guys to remember this about the internet. You never know who's listening. Somebody in another, a sponsor could be listening, saying, you know what? I want to help them build that show. You never know. Look how we met. You follow me? Who would have ever thought we'd be talking about business? We started talking about golf, but you guys didn't know that, you know, I deal with the digital, you know, with the digital aspect of things. You never know who's listening. And I tell you this, right now your show is in probably, if you look at your analytics, you're probably in more countries than you actually realize. If you look at your analytics, you may be getting followed by a certain demographic of female or male, certain ages. But your analytics, these free tools help you guide the ship to your own show. It used to be the Nielsen ratings. Well, that's people don't watch the Nielsen. They don't look at the Nielsen ratings. They look at analytics now. And that's where you will sell your show to bigger markets because you're going to get there. There's no doubt in my mind that you guys are going to get there. You guys are going to make it. But remember something. Everybody that says no to you is just getting out of the way for the next big artist to come through because you never know. Drake could be listening to this. Jay Prince could be listening. Ricky Rose could be listening to this. Justin Bieber could be listening to this. You never know. So you guys are in a sweet spot. Do not, and I tell you this, man, listen, it's lonely as an entrepreneur. Some days it's just you and him and your other partners. But do not stop, man. You cannot stop. You cannot.
This is, that means so much. You know, and I got to tell this story for some of our listeners that may not know how this happened. First off, with you, Sherrod, we got to talk about how we met because on the algorithms on, you know, IG, you know, I got a friend request from you. And, you know, my thing is, especially with you, you know, when I saw your organization, because I love diversity, I love people from all over, no matter who they are, who can bring something new. So, I mean, I thought, I looked at your profile. A black golfing? Yeah, I'm accepted. And I thought about it. I was like, yo, we need to bring him on the show. So that's what I, you know, DM'd you where we went from there.
Yes.
You know, yes. And we're so happy to have you on. Another story was when I knew we were moving in the right direction. Shout out to Jeter K, road manager for Rick Ross. You know, we linked last year, so we chopped it up. So earlier this year, I was talking to him, and
I was like, is there anything we can do to help out the brand? Well, he was like, yeah, we got this guy, this producer named Trop. Yeah, no, we're trying to get him out there. Would y'all bring him on the show? I'm like, say less. And King will tell you, I hit him. It told him we, and that's how it happened. And we ended up getting Trop on, and Trop wants to come back. You know, we got it, and we then right.
He's been a good vibe. Trop,
yeah. Yeah, and
well,
and
guys, you hit the, and I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just want to say this.
No, no, go ahead.
My
please.
ADD kicks in sometimes, so I apologize.
No, go ahead, go
but
ahead.
Let me say this to you: when me and you, when we were growing up, it was always we were taught 6 degrees of separation. You just proved
right.
that you are 2 degrees away from Rick Ross, the biggest boss. You just proved what I'm saying to you about your show. That means you're two people, you're two connects away from whoever you want to talk to. So don't ever give up on thinking you can't get such and such on the show, or you can't take it in this market. Because remember something, we think America, we got to start thinking like bosses worldly, because you got to remember in Asia, they love our culture. They love it. They emulate our culture. Now, if you were big in Asia, look, Ready for the World sold more records and Breed sold more records abroad than they did here. If you look at all artists and their selling, they sell more abroad. So your show may be appealing overseas. You may not get the love back here first. Lenny Kravitz, you guys know who he is. He sold more records overseas. He's Jimi Hendrix. They went over there to become big. Then the U.S. accepted them back. And those are just two examples.
Why do you think
overseas market is very overlooked? Because
they love black culture. Let's keep it a buck. They love the way we move. They love our swagger. They love it. Listen, I went back to my old high school for a game about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls were doing dance, you know, at halftime. You would have thought it was a concert. I couldn't believe Catholic girls just twerking. I couldn't believe it. But they love the music. They love the, you know what I mean? They love the movement. It's a fact. They love our culture in a good, in a respectful way. I'm not saying in a ratchet way, but
it's not appropriation.
Exactly. Why do you think rap music right now is you can go in any community, I'm talking 100,000 income and above, you hear rap music. Because the kids, look, a lot of these parents can't tell their kids what to listen to or what not to listen to. These kids are like, look, mom and dad, we're going to listen to it, and it is what it is. So what? Because these kids are not taught, and I'm going to say they're not taught racism. But they may have heard it, but this new generation, they don't care about that, man. Like, as I was growing up, my kids and their buddies, they don't see racism, man, like we used to, you know, have to endure. They don't see it. It's getting better and better and better. I equate it to great music. I equate it to fashion. I equate it to just respect for the other man. I really do, and woman.
Yeah, and we're turning that corner because we're seeing a situation where, because this is how people have to break down the demographics of hip-hop music. Women and white people are the biggest consumers of it when you break the numbers
down. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and when you look at it, when we look at where hip-hop culture started over really 50, 60 years ago, starting with James Brown and the JBs, who will lay down that foundation, then you go to the Last Poets, you know, even throwing it in Johnny Cash a little bit with some of his, how he would talk about some of the stuff. So you're looking at all these elements that will lay it down. You get into the 70s with Sugar Hill Gang, you get into the 80s, and it's where it really begins to blossom, because Def Jam was like the first big hip-hop label. And even then, people said it wouldn't last. They were saying the same thing about rock and roll, which was also founded by us. Shout out to Chuck Berry, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, and all of them. I mean, these are the people that Elvis Presley learned from, you know.
Well, if you look at Led Zeppelin, see, a lot of people don't know that Jimi Hendrix used to be a backup guitarist for the Isley Brothers. A lot of people don't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Right. Jimi Hendrix, if you Google it, Jimi Hendrix was probably in his 20s. He lived with Ronald Isley and his brother Ernie and gave him his first real guitar.
Wow.
Real first, I think, a Fender Stratocaster, yes. And I say that to say guys like Elvis Presley, they modeled after them. Now, you take Led Zeppelin. If you close your eyes and listen to Led Zeppelin, it's blues music put in a rock form.
Jimmy Page in terms of his
playing. Absolutely. If you take Elvis Presley, Jimmy Page, Bonham
John Bonham from Led Zeppelin.
John Bonham.
Yeah.
If you take him, you take a Bootsy Collins. If they had a baby, it would be Prince. Think about it. Prince was rock, funk, jazz. He was the intersection of all of that music. That's why he was an absolute genius. He could play any instrument. He was a master of 28 different instruments. The reason is, that, again, it goes back to, Prince understood, they love funk. They love a little rock and roll. They like a little guitar. They like a little bass. They like a guy on a hi-hat. He understood the bridge between that. Now, his dressing was a little risque, but
right.
The music, it goes back to what you said about music. Music transcends it all. When you look at 2 in the morning, at 1:30 in the morning, all a guy wants to hear is a good beat. You put on Baby Got Back by Sir Mix-a-Lot, he can tour off that record till he dies.
Right.
Think about it. You put that record on in any, especially a white nightclub or a wedding, every woman is jumping to the dance floor. Everyone.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's actually a degrading song if you really think about it. You know, if you really think about it, they'll jump out there. So you're right about the demographic. It's true.
I don't feel, when you again, think I don't about, kind of feel bad for that song anymore because that was officially a pop song. When you start going to white weddings and you see them little Mindy and Haley dancing through it and trying to twerk, it's crossed over to a different stratosphere.
Well, it goes back to what you guys said about being white. See, Tone Loc, Wild Thing, his kids, if he got his masters back, his kids will eat off of it. But it goes back to, understand why Damon Dash was so mad at Lior Cohen. Because he's like, look, you're sending your kids to private schools where Curtis Blow is still trying to starve and fight for a meal when they own the rights to their music. That's why he was saying, why am I going to go to another culture to ask, is it okay for my music to be played? How can you regulate my culture and you're corny? I totally understood what he meant by that. I totally understood that. That made all the sense in the world. You know, why am I going to go to Lior Cohen? Why am I going to go ask him for permission for my culture? If you really think about that, it really is an oxymoron.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
you got people that haven't really grew up in those trenches actually calling shots on what sounds hot in Black America, and that narrative need to change.
And this is a perfect segue.
It absolutely needs to.
And this is a perfect segue because Sherrod King, you need to send him that piece you wrote about Prince and all and everything in terms of Prince. With Prince, yes, because my brother wrote a hell of a piece about Prince and all the stuff in terms of the business of music. Because what you talk about business and how it's done, Sherrod, of course, we remember the days back in the day where Prince put Slave on his cheek in terms of the stuff he was fighting with Warner Brothers because he didn't even own his own name. So he fought that for like, what, 5-6 years until – and his situation was rare because he was self-contained. He wrote, produced, performed, composed, wrote for other people. So he had the money that he could fight it out. and changed his name in the process and released music under that and started his own label. I mean, so this is another guy next to Michael, Sharaw, and King who, like, was just ahead of the curve as well with his music in terms of the knowledge of the business.
Do you guys know the story about how Prince tried to get out of his contract? And you guys may have heard this story. Warner Brothers says, okay, you signed a 10-album deal. Well,
right.
We didn't have flash drives and things of that. Prince had a U-Haul pull up with almost 10 years' worth of music and dropped the keys off to Warner Brothers. He wanted out of his contract.
That's so funny.
They say we have a 10-album deal? Okay. He gave him 10 years' worth, and they still wouldn't let him out the contract.
Wow.
See, people don't understand, like, Kanye changing his name to Ye right now. That's the strategic move to get out of his contract because he's in a real – why do you think he went to religious music? Because he really – why do you think artists now are recording their music over? Like, look at Taylor Swift. She's now re-recording her music to get out of that contract. That 360 is the devil's paperwork, man. It is the devil's paperwork. And it goes back to what we were talking about. Prince is, okay, you want 10 albums? Well, the average guy, he's out partying. Prince is in the studio. You know, he's self-contained.
I will never forget when he did that interview with Tavis Smiley. And Tavis said, this was in 97, I will never forget that interview. And he said, okay, we've heard the stories for the record, because we've heard the stories about all the songs you have. How many songs do you really have? And Prince said, I don't like to speculate, but probably around 5,000. Tavis said, 5,000 ready to go. Prince said, 5,000 ready to go, all done.
If you watch the 60-minute special on Prince, they talked about the vault, and they're saying that they have enough music to last another, I think it's 20 years, on putting two or three albums out a year. Now, the only problem Prince had is with him dying without a will. This goes back to your paperwork, having things in order. Prince died without a will. So what happens is the lawyers get damn near half of his catalog, the state of Minnesota, by the time they tax it and do all of this. Jay-Z offered to come in and basically, you know, control the narrative of, because he sat down with Prince, and they talked legacy. Well, the family, you know, you remember, you got brothers and sisters, they don't know business, all they see is a lotto ticket. And when Prince died, it was in shambles. So the lawyers, so far, have got about, hundreds of millions of dollars out of his estate that a simple piece of paperwork would have solved, man. It would have solved. Again, having your paperwork in order. Now, Prince died, and his music and his legacy will live on. But he who controls his masters really wins. That's a fact.
Yeah, because, I mean, that people don't understand why the masters are so important, Sharaw, because the masters, when they're used in television, movies, commercials, all of that, you know, that's, you're getting that money off
TikTok
of that.
You know what's funny, guys, and I'm going to tell you guys this, and I want you to remember this. The one thing that we're about to miss is cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency and non-fungible tokens, NFTs, Snoop Dogg, of all people, is capitalizing on it greatly right now. Go to Gary V, or I think it's Ian Dunlap, Earn Your Leisure, those young brothers. Cryptocurrency is the new goal. It's when the Internet started. We, again, are about to miss this closure of the wealth gap if we're not careful. Cryptocurrency, NFTs, we can control the narrative, the metaverse. These things, these are different ways that we can control. You guys can have a podcast in the metaverse right now. right now. Your show can be in a metaverse right now. Now you say, well, why the metaverse? It's tomorrow, man. But tomorrow is today. It's happening. Zuckerberg didn't change Facebook's name just because he wanted to. He changed it because he's taken it to the next dimension. Facebook is about, yeah. I mean, a platform. There's no different than HughLinks, my platform, than Facebook, except he has, you know, 4 or 5 billion people, and we don't. The difference is it's a platform. Why did he buy WhatsApp? Why did he buy it? Well, now he's a large communication company. You can talk through it. You can talk through if you go to Facebook Messenger. It's a phone company. He's AT&T. He has diversified. He's created his own ecosystem. And that's what you guys have to do. We all have to do. We have to create our own ecosystem.
And we got to break that back to the beginning, Sherrod, because when we look at it with Zuckerberg, how many black people missed out on opportunities? Because Zuckerberg, when he started Facebook, what was it, Harvard? Was it Harvard, I believe, he was at?
It also plays way into media, man, because I remember even back then when we started doing this, us doing media, we were looked upon like we were squares because we weren't going outside. We was like, man, what you doing on the computer? I'm like, man, this thing is going to change the future right here. We got to take control of our media.
Listen, man, let me tell you something. I learned from having bad press how to control the narrative of your own brand. And I'm going to give you an example. Let's say right now, if you go right now, I can control both of your life's narrative right now by buying your .com. Shameless plug, enginesharc.com. You can go buy your domain name from us right now. Shameless plug. But in right now, you can't buy SherrodPegee.com because I own that. Do you know how many people don't own their own brand, just a common guy walking every day? Everybody should own their own name.
Absolutely.
Because you never know. You may become famous someday. And you have to buy your own domain back from that Yahoo or whomever's bought it or what company bought it. You got to start from the beginning. You got to start. You can't build a house on the second floor. You got to start with buying the lot. You have to. You have to control. Those guys that talked about you being on the computer, you were ahead of the game. You were light years ahead of the game. That's why we now have to jump out on cryptocurrency. We have to jump out on the metaverse and things, the altcoins. We have to learn all that, man. That's why we're always last, because they put World Star on online, and we watch a good fight. Hell, I like watching a good knockout, but I don't get in that. You know, I don't get engrossed with it.
Yeah. Two things.
If that makes
what
sense.
You said about, yes, two things. Because when we talk about with the Zuckerberg situation, he had an idea back in the day. And it grows directly, you know, with what King said about how, you know, well, you know, they said when he was in his dorm, he invited like 6-7 people to show up and only like 4 did. And look what happened. You know, it ends up becoming a world history changer in terms of how we communicate.
But do let me interject something for you. Now,
this goes
back to what we said earlier about capitalism. Have you ever heard of the Winklevoss twins?
No, I haven't.
They are the original. They wanted a dating site made. They said, "I got a guy that can program. Who is he? This guy named Mark." So Mark went over. They met with him. His last name happened to be Zuckerberg. So they said, "We got this idea." He said, okay. He said, let me go look at it. Mark said, hey, my man, get it how you can. I got Facebook. Now, fast forward that. When Mark Zuckerberg went public, the Winklevosses only got $56 million out of this. It was he stole their idea. When the Winklevosses, so the Winklevosses then looked defeated. Now, we know what Facebook has done. But the Winklevosses said, okay, we're going to take that $56 million and we're going to put it into Bitcoin. Now they're billionaires from Bitcoin. They saw the next wave. We see the next wave as African Americans. We just don't do shit about it. We see it. We see it every day. But we don't do anything about it. We don't. Zuckerberg was smart enough to say, okay, look, I'm going to get Wall Street behind me. I'm going to get the powers and the money behind me. And he put a clause in, going back to great paperwork. He can never be outvoted. As long as he wants to be CEO, he can, even though he's a public company, he never loses control. It goes back to what the great Stephen A. Feingold always taught me. It always goes back to your paperwork. What's in place in the beginning lasts the entire way through. That's a fact. That's a fact. People steal ideas all the time because people don't get an NDA. You know, they don't get a non-compete clause or, you know, just the paperwork in order. If I show you something, you can't take it somewhere. A lot of people just go and trust on faith, and a lot of times they get burned. That's a fact.
Yeah. I mean, and it's wild because we got to introduce you to our good friend, Sean Del Rosa of Jazzy Management, who manages the East Siders. Because a couple of weeks ago, we interviewed him, Sherrod, and the jewels he gave us about the music industry, like you have, is just about how artists need to register their music properly to make sure they can get it. He said there's over $3 billion of unpaid royalties to artists just because they have not registered their music correctly to collect on it. I mean, you know, but these are things, like you said, it's about understanding what the future wave is and getting that surfboard of smarts to ride it, you know, and hang 10, you know, getting paid, you know, or you're going to lose it. You're going to wipe out. I mean, this is, you know, as black people, we have to understand that there is so much more out there that we can do. And, you know, at the end of the day, don't let anybody's negative opinion stop you from having a positive outlook on what your future is going to be. Don't let someone be a dream killer for what your aspirations are. And I think we have to understand that. And even if we understand that, we have to have the knowledge to go out and pursue it. Desire is one thing. Having the academics to achieve it is something you really have to take hold of.
Well, not only are you correct, I want you to think about one thing. I want you to think back to Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, anyone with a affliction of sight, hearing, whatever. When you see a guy in a wheelchair at 8 o'clock in the morning, that means he started getting up at 6, getting ready to prepare to be where you saw him at. He had to go that extra mile, so to speak, to be and see and be where he is. I want you guys to remember one thing. Every connection you do, every person you meet is another fan that extends to just the willpower. Kevin Hart put it best. He says, everybody says I'm an overnight success. He says, yeah, 19 years later. 19 years later. Man, there's days I get overwhelmed. There's days that I tear up out of frustration. You name one entrepreneur that you know that don't. Listen, like you said, you can go and see Facebook. You can go see the pretty this, the pretty that. But there are days they need more cash. There's days they need more customers. There's days that you feel you didn't get anything done. You get overwhelmed. But as Rick Ross said, and I keep referring back to him, but I watched a powerful article he did. He said once you hit one, you forget about the 100 losses. Walt Disney was denied by over 1,700 banks. Had a nervous breakdown. Now, I don't want to hear the white, the black. I don't care about that. Let's talk about just the story.
Right, right.
Nervous breakdown. He still, through perseverance, made it. Look at Tyler Perry, man. Look at him. Look at what he's done. Look at all these entrepreneurs. Look in your community. Every success story had pain. Hell, I got pain. Everybody's got pain. It's not just all cute, you know, popping bottles. It's not. It's not. It's not. So you guys got to remember, as well as building your brand, as long as you control your brand, nobody can misrepresent your brand, because then you have recourse. You don't let anybody play with your business. Don't let anyone play with your business name. Go out, buy all the different variations of your company name, your personal name, the .coms, the .nets, the .orgs, the .infos. You have to. It's a must, because you have to protect. Because think about it. Your competition can go buy your .net and then forward it to their radio show, and now they're ciphering off of your views. That's a fact.
Yeah. One thing we've learned as we've gone along, because we got a vision for this as we go along with it. King and myself have talked off air about this in terms of where we really want to go with it. And we know that while we've achieved a lot, we still got a long ways to go in terms of really taking it. But we've got people like yourself and so many others that have gotten behind us, guessed it, and most importantly, believe in what we do. And as much as we love our guests, we love the fact that y'all really, really, really took the time to see the vision, just like we appreciate, acknowledge, respect, and support what you do, because this goes both ways. And it's working in tandem to really build that bridge, and not only that, give a voice to the village that bridge leads to.
Listen, you know, it's two important things that I think we have to give our youth. And this may sound crazy, but the two tools that I tell any parent when they ask me for advice or anything of that nature, teach your son or daughter how to play chess. It helps them think.
Analytical,
them golf,
yeah, strategic.
Yes, absolutely. It every night before I go to bed, I swear to you, I play, even on the computer, I play a game of chess just to kind of keep the juices flowing. And with the game of golf is the game of life. It just is. It teaches you manners. It teaches you just, you know, your dress, you know, your apparel, your manners. If we can get that and add in the technology, we have a fighting chance. Because I'm going to tell you this now, and I warn you both, in your communities and my communities, Hispanics are moving into the black communities
and buying it
faster than we actually know, and buying it up. And all the mothers and the single mothers, the non-single mothers, the families, they're going to apartments in these richer areas thinking, oh, they're moving out. Well, gentrification? I'm saying the word wrong. But
gentrification,
it's happening right before us. Yes. It's happening right in our faces. And Nipsey Hussle, he talked a lot about this. Claude Anderson, Dr. Claude Anderson, speaks a lot about this. Even here in Flint, people don't see it's quietly becoming a Hispanic fabric that is very, very noticeable. Hey, they're hard workers. They want the jobs that we don't want.
True.
The problem is African Americans are going to be outsourced, out-educated, and out-understood in the very near future. And we got to stop that. We have to. You know, the stimulus money. Take that stimulus money and flip it, man. Start a business with it. That's enough startup money. That's all you need to start a business. You know,
LLC,
funny story.
All of that.
Listen, when stimulus came out, me and my family went down to Somerset Mall. And I took a picture of the line wrapped around from Louis Vuitton and Gucci. And I found myself angry because a lot of guys in line had on, you know, Balenciaga, you know, red bottoms, the Louis bags, the Gucci bags. in all the respected lines, but I saw so many young entrepreneurs. I saw so many visionaries. And it hurt my heart because I said to myself, I should have been passing out business cards, saying, hey, man, look, if you can go spend $2,000 in there, you can be doing this.
Right.
Think about it. Somebody in that line was a designer. They should be buying from her or him. Come on, man.
Yeah, but it goes to a situation where you got a lot of people that either they want to stunt, and we're not. And of course, you're not saying there's anything wrong with. But the thing is, it's about priorities in terms of where you're putting the paper at, in terms of what payment is. You know, instead of putting all that for something, put that towards something that benefits you, as opposed to somebody else. It's the priorities. You know, and whether it's business or where some people have a business, but they just want to look the part. And like one thing about Dame Dash, she said, every dollar I get goes right back into every business that I have. You know, and that's how you got to look at it. You know, don't worry about what everybody is going to say about such and such. Go ahead, please.
Listen, man, it's like the drug game. And Dame Dash said it best. He says, look, man, my re-up money, when I make money on this deal, I always keep money in the street. I'm going to say something that is politically not correct. I teach my sons and other entrepreneurs. Black people brag about how much they spent. Man, I spent $600 on these shoes, these tennis shoes. I spent $1,000. Other ethnic groups brag about how much money they save. I want you to think about that. We always brag. Look, I even did it in my young. Yeah, man, I bought that. I spent yada, yada, yada. You don't ever hear a white guy or a Hispanic guy or Asian guy out saying, yeah, well, I spent da, 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 da. No, he brags about, hey, man, I saved $200 on this or I saved. Think about it, man. If you really think about it, we brag about it and don't own shit.
That's true.
Harsh reality.
I mean, it's we
got it.
Say what?
Yeah. No.
That's the harsh reality.
It is.
Yes. Yes.
And, Sherrod, we are, because we don't want Blog Talk to cut us off. Sherrod, we got through 2 hours of this, and we didn't even get to the golf, and we're going to get that for part two. Sherrod, this is.
Well, I tell you what, man. I'm here for you guys, man. I'm going to support the machine, and anything behind the scenes I can do with you guys tech-wise, let's go for it, because this is how I view it. The more I help you, the more you help us. I'm building an ecosystem in my own right. You guys are building a dynasty and an ecosystem. We want, because remember something, my son has to do business. My son and daughter and your son and daughter, they must do business together one day.
Yeah, and we're about creating that legacy where everybody in the village can live long and live strong, you know, and have, you know, that foundation of fiscal responsibility and camaraderie in the community. Sherrod, this has been incredible, man. We can't wait to have you back on.
I'm here for you guys, man. I'm here for you guys, man. And remember something, man. If you want to get a domain name, you want to build up your personal presence, hey, Engine Shark, we're there. We're GoDaddy on steroids. So if you want to build your brand, hey, let's do it. EngineShark.com. If you've got videos, if you're in the music industry or have a video, go to Yipster.com. You know, they're building a wonderful video search engine over there. They are. And
before we get off there,
it's all African American owned.
Before we get off there, give everybody that IG information, your social media, everything out there.
Okay. It's very simple, guys. I want to thank you guys first of all for having me and my ADHD.
It's okay.
I appreciate you guys. But you can go to enginshark.com. Again, it's GoDaddy on steroids. You can go to, they're releasing the apps for Yivster.com. That's Yivster.com. Social media is all the same. And if you want to join something like a Facebook, go to HueLinks.com, HueLinks.com. It's Facebook meets LinkedIn. So if you want to go for personal or you want to go for business, HueLinks, it's a community. We're just bridging gaps, putting people of color in touch with one another. We're just bridging that
and
gap.
And don't forget Minority
so you
Golf
guys,
Association
amen.
On IG. Don't forget Minority
yes.
Golf
yes.
Association
yes.
on IG.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Minority Golf, you can reach it at any platform, same name all the way across. And, again, pick up the golf club and keep the ball straight down the fairway.
Amen to that. But we always gonna we always striving for that hole in one, man. And we're gonna strike with that 9-iron
That's right.
going deep.
And man, and I'd love to play with you guys. Let me know. Let me know. Me and the boys are coming in town, man. And we'd love to break bread with you guys soon.
Definitely, man. Look, we gotta get that trip planned for next year. So I mean. We're on it. Sherrod, much love to you and your family. We love you all. Thank you so
yes.
much. And we will be in touch.
God bless you guys, man. God bless and have a wonderful Christmas and a happy New Year. Well, 2022 is you guys. You guys are going to do great things. So we're just fans. That's it.
And we're air conditioners of y'all. So, yeah.
Well, let's get it. Let's get this paper, man.
Yes, sir. Right. God bless. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
All right.
Happy
be blessed.
Holidays. Yes, be blessed. Thank you again.
Yes, sir. Yep. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.